So today, what we are talking about is spiritual care. So when Blanche, when I was hearing what Blanche was talking just now, the division between psychosocial care and emotional and spiritual care, it's very close. It's, the borderline is very fuzzy. So actually, what I am going to say, to talk about, Blanche already talked about at least half of them. So what I'm going to talk about today is what is the meaning of spirituality? When we talk about spiritual care, first we need to understand what spirituality means. Why is spiritual care important? Why is it so important for us to care for people at the end of life? And where is our starting point? Why should we provide spiritual care? Where is our starting point? And then we want to talk about who shall provide spiritual care? And what can we do? And lastly, we're gonna share with you some difficulties in providing spiritual care. So, first of all, what is spirituality? When people think about spirituality, it's all, you know, usually it's associated with religion, right? And but before that, let's talk about why we need to provide spiritual care for dying. Blanche already talked about it a little bit. When someone is at the end of life, there are a lot of things that are in their mind. One of the things that they people with a lot of time think about is that they kind of think about a lot of existential questions, philosophical questions, which they usually never think about. They are too busy. They're too busy working, caring for their family. And now, they are in the hospital, they're at home, and they are dying. And they can think about, who am I? I've been on this earth for 70, 80, 90 years. But actually, who am I? Why am I here? Why am I here in this earth? What is the purpose? What is the meaning of my life? So all these things will come into their mind. And they might think about their loved ones, you know, their family. What is my family going to do after I die? So all these things will be in the mind of the dying. So that's why we want to provide them with some support, relief and support. When a patient goes into hospice care, it means that medicine has done its job. There is really nothing much medicine can do. So physical healing stops. We are providing comfort care for the patient, but there's no healing physically. But even there is no healing physically, healing in emotionally and spiritually can still happen, can still occur. That is why it's important to provide spiritual care for death and dying. So, let me ask you, I know that there are a lot of people here, how many of you are Christian? How about Buddhists? Do we have Buddhist patients, people? What about people with no religion? So, the first challenge I'm going to ask you, if you want to provide spiritual care or understand spiritual care, is really need to expand your view of spirituality. Spirituality is not only about religion, it's beyond religion. And here's what I propose. Spirituality, you can look at spirituality as a connection to something transcendent. It's connection of yourself with something beyond us. It doesn't have to be God, it could be something else. It could be something that is you cannot explain. You can feel it, but you cannot explain. There's something above us, beyond us. So that is one definition of spirituality. The other definition is, you can look at spirituality as something that gives us meaning. Give us very deep meaning. What is meaningful to you might not be meaningful to another person. So if you look at that and try to expand the difference of spirituality. And so we're going to look at those two, the second and the third point, as we go on, talk about spiritual care. So I put the 2 points down below so you could remind us. So for Christians, of course, Christian, our spirituality is our special relation, our connection with the divine. Right? So I don't have to go into it. I don't have time to go into it. I think every Christian understands what I'm talking about. It's a relationship. You know, to some people, for example, if you are Catholic, you know that there are a lot of sisters, nuns, or monks, that they dedicate their life in prayer, in meditation, contemplation, in songs. It's a way of living. It's kind of infused into their whole being. It's a part of them. But what about other religion? For example, Jewish or Islam. You know, what is spirituality for them? We cannot exclude them, even though they are, you know, non-Christian religion. So, for example, for a Jewish person, what comes to mind is that it is the loyalty and obedience. Look at how much the Jewish people have suffered through history. It's the loyal and obedience that lead them through very difficult period. And what about Islam or other religion? Like, for example, they are Pentecostal, charismatic, mystic. Mystic is really important to them. It is something that you actually, the existence is centered on mystical communication with the Lord. So you can see that there are a lot of different meaning of spirituality. What about our Asian religion? What about if you are Hindu or Buddhist? What is spirituality? Do you consider that spiritual? When I look at a monk, when they are praying, I feel that it's very, very spiritual, extremely spiritual. So, you know, they might talk about Nirvana and other ideas that, you know, I know that your Buddhist brothers and sisters can teach me a lot about spirituality. What about other people? I visit a lot of patients from China that grew up in China during the 60s or 70s, when religion is really, you can't even talk about religion. So what is spiritual for them? A lot of people find that family give them meaning. You know, their loved ones give them meaning. That's the most important thing for them. I visited a lot of patients who told me there's nothing more important to them than their family. So their family give them meaning. The family give them spirituality. This happens to be my family. And so for certain people, family give them ultimate meaning. Where other, how about our work? I visit a lot of patients on their deathbed. All they want to talk about is their contribution. Their contribution and their work. They associate their contribution as and their accomplishment as the most important thing. It gives them meaning. I'm sure that you would know a lot of people who are workaholic. Work, you know, and some of them, after they retire, become very, very ill and they die. Because to them, work and the contribution to the society is spiritual. And what about artwork? I'm sure that you know some people who are really into artwork or music or, you know, sports or something that they like to do. It gives you meaning. It gives you happiness. It makes you dance. You know, I'm sure that you might experience when you look at a piece of artwork, it moves you. Or listen to a piece of music, you know, move you to tears. Or when you're doing exercise, you know, you're really rigorously doing exercise or dancing. After a little while, you feel that you are connected with something beyond yourself. That's spirituality. And then lastly, what about the nature? Some people may not have any religion. When they go and look at a very beautiful sunset, or they look at the Niagara Falls, or the Grand Canyon, they feel something beyond themselves. They feel awe. They feel that there's a connection with something that they cannot explain. They feel small, but they feel that the universe is infinite. That's spirituality too. So, what I'm asking you to do is to expand your first challenge is to be inclusive. Do not think that one group is more spiritual than the other. And it's to expand your view on spirituality. And the second challenge I'm asking you to do is to find commonality between these religions. So when you visit someone who is not your faith, you know, if you are a Christian, you visit a Buddhist family or Buddhist patient, how do you relate to them? Or if you are Buddhist, you visit someone that has no religion, how do you relate to them? You have two choices. You could either emphasize on your difference, or you could emphasize on your commonality. My challenge is for you to focus on the commonality and not focus on the differences. What are common to us? To me, three things are very common, no matter you have religion or what religion you have. Truth, goodness, and beauty. You look at every religion or no religion, we all have these three things in common. So when you visit someone, provide spiritual care to someone who is a little different than you, focus on commonality. So, who should provide spiritual care? Of course, everyone in the hospice service or the hospital staff would provide spiritual care. Chaplain, clergy, they are the people who provide spiritual care. And we talk about hospice and hospital staff, but all of us, family and friends, we can provide spiritual care. Those people, those counselor, or the hospital staff, they are only there a few, maybe an hour a day, 2 hours a day. You are with your family, with your friends all the time. You are the one who needs to provide spiritual care. So that's why we want to talk about a little bit to give you some tools that you could provide spiritual care to your family and friends. Before we start, we need to, every one of us provide spiritual care, need to have a reason to do that. For me as a Christian, you know, I look at it and there are many, many examples in the Bible that tells you to care for your family, or care for your friends, or care for other people. To me, it's these two things. It's the story of the Good Samaritan and the Matthew Gospel. So I'm not going to go into that because this is something that you might discuss with your pastor or your faith. Faith community, because if you, I know that some of you might want to become a volunteer someday with the hospice service and provide spiritual care or provide just support for other people. And those people are not your family, they are not your friends, they might be a stranger. So you must have a reason to go into someone's house and provide care. To me, everyone needs to find something that is meaningful for yourself so that you could hang on to it. Because it's not an easy work. Sometimes you say, I don't want to do it anymore. But if you don't have some starting point, you don't have something that you can hang on to, it's going to be very, very difficult for you. And then if you are Buddhist, you need to find your own reason too. To me, the Buddhist philosophy of the Four Noble Truths about suffering, that's a wonderful, wonderful reason right there that why you want to provide spiritual care for friends or your maybe. What about other religion? You know that in the Jewish tradition, the mitzvah, if you are a Jewish follower, you are obligated. It's not an option. You are obligated to care for the sick. Not only just be there. You have to care for them in body, in your soul, and with money. But, so for the Jewish people, that is a commandment to do that. What about people with no religion? How do you do that? How do you, what can you hang on so that it give you strength when you minister to people at death and dying? Well, humanitarianism. You know, everyone is able to relate to that. What about compassion? Everyone has compassion, even if you don't have religion. You have compassion. If you hang on to this when you minister to the death and dying, I think that would make it more meaningful to you. So, I know that Blanche talked about this a little bit. What is our goal? What is the purpose of giving spiritual care? If you are a Christian or other religion, I know that there's a mandate for us to give witness to God, to spread God's word, to convert someone, you know, from Buddhism to Christianity or atheism to Christianity. If you believe in that, that's great. You know, this is your work. But if you are caring for the deaf and dying, this is not the time to do it. You know, I've known people, family get distressed because the whole family is Christian. The mother is a Buddhist, you know, been Buddhist for whole life. And on the deathbed, this Christian family wants to convert the mother from Buddhism to Christianity. You think that is helping the mother? You think it's helping her to relieve her pain and suffering? I don't know. I don't think so. Besides, you have 30 years. And you can't do it in 30 years. You think that in the last few days you can do that? You have done your best. For 30 years you have done your best. Leave the rest to God. I know that, you know, we are really anxious about that. And say, hey, you know, I know that some traditions say that if you don't come to Christ, you would never, never be accepted into the kingdom of God. Well, I understand that, but I also challenge you to look at the God that Jesus taught, the God that is loving and is really accepting, and allow the possibility to be Christian, as we all, a lot of times you hear that people say, it's an invitation. Religion, it is a freedom, you know, so I ask you to look at that and be a little careful. So what is spiritual care? Spiritual care is, you know, spiritual help and support for the deaf and dying. And what shall we do? What is our role? What is our role? So my thinking is, the first of all, the most important thing is be yourself. Don't pretend to be someone else. Just be yourself. That's the most important thing. And then be a friend or a companion. What a companion does is that the companion travel together with this patient, right? And a friend is a truth teller, and you share story, share your experience. When a person at the end of their life, one of the most meaningful thing for them is to think back, you know, to re-examine their life, look at their life journey. Share memory is a really, really precious thing. So if these are the things that you want to be, what should you avoid to be? Okay? What kind of things you should not do? You should not be a priest or a pastor. If you are not a priest or a pastor, don't pretend to be one. You cannot say that God will do such and such a thing for you. God will do this to you. No, you are not God. You cannot speak for God. So don't pretend to be a pastor or a minister if you are not. You cannot be a savior. You know, people will think that you go to visit someone and you see a lot of problems of this family or this patient. And, oh, I'm going to talk some sense into this person. Well, my friends, I'm telling you, you might not see the whole story. You might not know the whole story. So don't try to be a savior. You just disappoint yourself and disappoint your friend. Don't be a cheerleader. That's not the time. Someone is very sick and is dying and you want to cheer them up. Yeah. I've seen a lot of people go and visit a dying patient and say, get well, we go dim sum next week. No, she may never go dim sum again. Don't just say that because it makes you feel good. Okay. Blanche also said that the people question, there are a lot of things that people question at the end of the life. They ask you questions that they don't expect you to answer them. They just want someone to listen to them. You don't have to answer these questions. And usually, but it's a lot of questions they ask have no answer. Don't be a psychiatrist. Even if you've taken 101 psych, that doesn't make you an expert. Leave it to Blanche. Right? We are there to support them. Don't be an entertainer or comedian. Don't try to tell jokes and things like that. It's not the time. It's the time to be with the patient and share feelings. And lastly, don't be a news reporter. Don't say, you know, don't be a gossiper. Tell them what this person do, and what you hear, you can go out and tell someone else. There's a privacy involved. Please, you know, these are the things that we need to avoid. To do. Remember, when you visit a person who is at the end of their life, it's a privilege. It's a privilege. Think of that as a privilege. It's a very beautiful thing that you can be with someone at the end of their life. Don't think that you are a helper. Yes, it's nice that you can help. But if you think that you are the helper, a lot of time you may be disappointed. Just accept that as a privilege. Someone led you into their life. You know, someone is dying and they led you into their life. It is a privilege. So, what are the ways that we want to... are there any tools when you visit an end-of-life patient? I'd like to use something that Angelise Ehring, who is a cultural anthropologist, and she did a lot of research on different culture, and she came up with four very special roles and traits of a leader. And a lot of spiritual caregivers use these techniques when they visit patients, and I think that you would also benefit from it. First one is to be present. Do not judge. Blanche talked about it already, and I'm going to emphasize on it now a little more. Focus on heart and meaning, and Blanche also talked about this earlier, is to let go. Be present. You know, when you visit someone, a lot of things is outside of your control. There's only one thing that you may have certain control is to be yourself. Right? To be yourself, to be focused. Focus. So if you are here, you are thinking about what you're going to have dinner tonight or what you're going to do tomorrow, you are not here. You are not being present. You are not listening to what I'm saying. So when you are with a patient, if you want to provide them with spiritual care, be present, because people will feel it. I know. I mean, I look at the audience here, I know who is really listening to me. I mean, you can tell. You know, there's no pretense to it. And be at the moment. Don't think about tomorrow, what you're going to do. Don't think about the past. You know, when I was listening to Blanche, and I was saying, oh, she's talking about this thing, and wow, how does it relate to what I'm going to talk about now? So I was thinking about that, and I missed what she's going to talk about the next thing. So I'm not being present, and I caught myself, and I said, stop doing it. You know, focus and be present. You know. And if you think that you are out, you kind of tend to drift aside, focus back on your breath and your heartbeat. And you focus on your breath and your heartbeat, you cannot help but being in the present, because being in the moment. The art of listening is extremely important when you are with a patient. There are a lot of research saying that verbal words, the word that you talked about, is only 7% of communication. 38% comes from the tone of how you say the word, and the rest, 55%, come with it's your body language. When you visit a patient, look at your body language. It's yours. Like that. Or you are relaxed. Right? You need to be relaxed. You don't cross your leg, cross your hands, because you want to be in an open position. In an open position, relax, have eye contact, and then you always check yourself, check your shoulder. Sometimes, when you are tense, your shoulder tense up, your jaw will tense up. Try to relax and be yourself. The art of listening is, when I look out, when I was talking, I see people smiling and smiling. I know that you are listening to me. I know that you understand what I'm talking about. If you don't have any response, I know that you are not understanding what I'm saying, right? So, active listening, when someone tells you something, you could rephrase it, or just say the same thing. If someone tells you, I'm really suffering, you could say, oh, I hear that you are saying that you are suffering. Well, because you say that back to the person, she or he knows that you are listening to them. It makes a big difference. The second thing Blanche talked about is extremely important. You go into someone's family, you go in to visit someone, you see a lot of things that you would do otherwise. A lot of times, we will begin to judge that situation, judge that person, okay? So, look at this. See that? That's a picture of a woman, okay? How many of you see a young lady? Please raise your hand if you see a young lady. Okay, good. How many of you see an old woman? Okay, look around, right? You see a few people raise hand when they see a young lady. And a few people say that they see an old woman. So if you're sitting right next to someone who see different things of you, you try to convince them, no, it's a young lady, right? The other person, no, it's an old woman. You're seeing the same thing, right? Judgment depends on a lot of times. Even you see with your own eyes, you're seeing different things, okay? So those who see the young woman, now, if you look at it again, can you see an old woman? Those who see an old woman, if you look at it again, can you see a young woman? Can you? It's difficult. But you see the young woman turning her head, it's a cheek, and with a necklace now, right? So, see, someone's still trying to explain, but still don't believe. So don't judge. Do not judge. So the other thing is that you look at this picture, you see some short lines, some long lines, right? The long lines are going in an angle. You see that? Mm-hmm. See that, everyone? But if I tell you the long lines are actually not at an angle, they are parallel. You know why you see them at an angle? It's because the short stroke make it appears to be, should be running at an angle. So there are a lot of factors affect how you see things. So that's really important that you recognize that our perception can be distorted. So you cannot, it's not easy to judge a situation. So if I kidnap you today, I kidnap you and bring you to a room outside, and I lock you in that room, no window, no lights, I give you some water, some food, lock you up in a room, in this dark room, for 4 days. 4 days, 4 nights. Okay? You know, any light at all, nothing. No cell phone, nothing. Right? So you're in this dark place for 4 days, 4 nights. And I let you out. I let you out. The first thing you see is this. Okay? Is this dawn or is it dusk? Is it morning or is it evening? Can you tell? It's the first thing you see. You come out of the room. How many say that it's morning? How many say it's evening? Well, I don't know. And you won't either if you are, you know, kept in a room for 4 days that you don't have any reference. You have no reference. So many factors will affect how we perceive things. So do not judge, please. You need to examine yourself, your own prejudice, your own preconception. Because our experience affects how we see things. A lot of times we don't know the whole story. So you need to respect other people's point of view. Okay. The third thing Angelis talked about is focus on heart and meaning when you visit someone. Okay, so what does that mean? First of all, no small talk. You know, small talk, you could have some small talk when you first visit a person. If you continue the small talk throughout your whole visit with the patient, it's really meaningless. Save your small talk in the elevator or at a company party. You know, someone at the end of their life, they don't have the luxury of small talk. It's not really necessary. Don't be afraid to show some emotion. You know, if these people say that, oh, I feel so sad, I want to cry. It's okay to cry. It's okay to shed tears. But you don't want to. You know, when the patient is, you know, it's maybe the patient shares some tears and you get more emotional than the patient. There's something wrong with you. But it is okay to share some feeling. It is human to share some feeling. It's meaningful to do that. Silence is golden. You don't always have to talk when you visit someone to provide spiritual support. Silence is precious and it's healing and it's spiritual. Compassion, be compassion. And there are levels of compassion. You know, I'm just listing three. All three, you could say that this is compassion. The first thing is pity. Pity, there is a meaning of I am higher, you are lower, I am better, you are not as good. I pity you. Well, that's still compassion. Sympathy is a little different. Sympathy is that we have a common experience. For example, you know, my mother died 3 months ago. Right? So now, if I see someone's mother is very sick, near dying, I sympathize with this person. I know I've been through that, so, you know, we have a shared experience, right? So I sympathize with this person. But a lot of times sympathy is that you are sorry for yourself, right? You go to a funeral and you could be crying. Because a lot of times we remember our sorrow. It's our sorrow. It's still not the other person's sorrow. But empathy is different. But empathy is that you place yourself in someone's shoe. You might not have the same experience. But you care enough to put yourself in that person's shoe and try to experience his or her sorrow and suffering. And that is sympathy. Sympathy is very difficult to do. I mean, empathy is very difficult to do, but it's a really, really good tool because a lot of times we don't have shared experience. We don't have the same experience. You need to put yourself in other person's shoes to really appreciate what they are going through. So the fourth thing is really important is to don't focus on the outcome. Don't say that I'm going to go visit someone, I want to help someone, and it should be this, this, this. After I visit them, they will come to the light and they will see the picture. No. There's no condition. That's unconditioned. It is nothing you want, nothing to be returned. In the Christian belief, we call it agape love, right? Unconditioned. And do nothing. I think Chinese are very good with this, because this is in our philosophy. You look at Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu Tao Te Ching, he is saying, Wei Bo Wei, Si Wu Si, Wei Wu Wei. That's the thing, is say, do nothing. A sage will do nothing and accomplish everything. Sometimes you just sit there with a patient, you just sit there with someone. That's all you need to do. And you can accomplish so much more than you talking about a lot of things. Blanche talked about it, let go. If you are a Christian, you do your part and let go. It is not a business transition that you're helping people. You let go and not let God do His work. So those are the four things that Angelis talked about when it will give you some tools when you visit a patient. So spiritual care, there are a few things I want to point out that you need to understand your boundaries, right, when you visit someone. What are the boundaries, right? Even between husband and wife, there is a boundary. Between mother and children, there is a boundary, right? Between friends, there are boundaries that you need to respect. What it is, I cannot tell you. You could feel that, okay? So the five things, another thing you might, you know, if we have a chance that Blanche may do another workshop on this thing. When someone is dying, they usually go through five stages of grief. You may be surprised that when you visit a friend, one day she will be so sad, and then the next day she will be so angry, right? And you don't know what's going on. Every day may be a little different, because people will go through these five stages. And I'm not going to go through that, but just to know that if you experience something different, emotions from some same person, it is normal. You need to respect the patient and the family need. And, you know, I always amazed that people would let me go visit people, a patient at the deathbed, because I am really intruding into their very private time, private space. A lot of time when people are at the end, they really want to save their time to spend with their family. So you really need to respect that. When someone, when you call and you want to visit someone and the family say no, you really need to respect that. And you don't want to push that much. Because sometimes people just try to be polite and you know, say, oh, okay, you can come. But a lot of times, they really need your privacy and you need to respect that. And again, privacy is so important. The patient may be talking to you about something and you really shouldn't share it with other people because there is a privacy. But on the other hand, you need to balance it. But sometimes you see that there's a need there. If nobody sees something that this patient needs, and then you need to tell someone. You need to tell the family that's what she needs. There is a balance. I can tell you exactly how to, you know, discern that, but you know, you have to be the judge to see when you should really keep what's private, and sometimes you recognize there's a need for the patient that you need to tell someone about it. Okay? So there's some difficult questions that Blanche was talking about. People would ask you, you know, why me? I'm a good person all my life. Why am I getting sick when I'm just about to retire? You know, why me? Well, I'm a great Christian. I pray a lot. Why isn't my prayer answered? Am I being punished for what I have done? So, a lot of these things, the patient will ask you, and please, there are no simple answers to these things, and I really, really would not attempt to answer this question. Because your answer is good for you. It may not be good for the patient. And these are the time that you probably want to refer to a clergy, a pastor, or someone of blanche, or some, you know, a social worker, psychiatrist to answer some of these questions. And what about miracle? You know, a lot of Christians, they expect miracle. And if you go in and say, hey, you need to pray. If you have prayed, if you have faith in God, if you pray good enough, God will heal you. Don't ever say that. You cannot speak for God, number one. God has his reason to do things, right? But if this person has a lot of faith and he prays a lot and still nothing happened, are you saying that it is his fault? That he doesn't have enough faith? He did not pray hard enough? That's something that we have to be careful not to say. So, going back to what Blanche was saying, if there is one thing I want you to remember, if there is one slide I want you to get into your mind, is this slide. This is something so important. This is something every dying patient needs to say and need to hear. And this is very difficult for Chinese sometimes to do that. I had a visit with a Chinese patient last year in the hospital. Big room, big hospital, probably one of the biggest hospital rooms, right? The bed is here. The patient is a woman, is dying, and I know that she only have hours to live. The whole family is sitting around the room, right? Like 12 people sitting around the room, way on the other side of the room, very quiet, just sitting there. I walk in there and I say, something needs to be done. They need to share this meeting, right? So I invite, you know, I was talking to them. I said, you know, it's okay to go in, come here, go to the bed and express your feelings. Tell your mother how sorry you are that she's leaving you. And they really don't want to do that. I kind of, you know, I kind of grab hold of one of the sons and they say, come with me. So, and I kind of facilitate this person, start talking to him. And he just lost over there. Oh, and he's just crying and tell the mother how much he will miss her. And once this person start talking, all the rest of the day of the family come around the bed and, you know, do the same thing. At end of life, there's really no time left. If don't do that, there's no time. Doing it sooner than later will give you time to spend with the patient, be more meaningful. So, in closing, I just want to remind everyone to try to be present when you visit someone. Do not judge, please do not judge. We usually don't see the whole picture. Use your heart and focus your heart and meaning. Let go of outcome. Don't expect something. Let go. And one last thing is self-care, because caring for patients is extremely difficult, both physically, emotionally. So take care of yourself. Remember, if you are a Christian, Jesus said, love your neighbor as what? Yourself. You need to love yourself. You don't love yourself, how do you love others? Well, thank you so much for your time.